tears roll down your face. Reaching for something, someone to embrace. To numb pain.
Welcome to Sobriety Checkpoint. I'm your host, Felicia Hermley. I'm a 12-stepper turned therapist. I'm married and I have two littles under five. I love Jesus, but have had my fair share of struggling with church culture and religion. I know what it's like to be stuck in a restless, irritable, and discontent rut, drunk and sober. In this podcast, you're going to hear stories of hope for sober living, as well as solutions for navigating mental health, spirituality, and relationships in recovery. Grab your keys and let's go for a drive. There's no judgment or breathalyzer at this sobriety checkpoint. Thanks so much for coming back to listen to part two of Matt Scaletti's story. If you haven't heard part one, go ahead and pause. Go back to the last episode and listen to part one. But I'm glad that you're here, so let's get into it. During that period of time when you were drinking again, were you doing these competitions still, or did that stuff stop happening?
I did not do any competitions. I'm pretty sure I did not. I know I did not. After that, I started slowly drinking again. But the thing was, and to your point earlier, I was justifying it the second time around. The second time around, I was like, but I'm still really healthy. I'm still working out. Like, this is just slowly creeping into my lifestyle, but it's not nearly as bad as it was before. So maybe I can still function at a very high level while drinking on trips and maybe on the weekend here or there. And as we know, this is not how it turns out with all that stuff. So I was still doing very active things, like they have Tough Mudders and Spartan races. I was doing that, but you don't have to be completely sober to do that stuff. When you're competing on stage, you can't be drinking because you could just see it. Like, you just don't look physically as, you know, muscular or whatever you want to call it. And I found other ways and other things to compete in where I'd be able to still drink here and there and compete at somewhat of a high level, but not on stage. So that's a really good question. And I still did a lot of physically active stuff. I just did it around a little bit of drinking to excess here and there.
You said it started off with wine. So was that phase wine? And did you tell yourself, oh, wine's good for my heart? Did you have that?
Oh, line? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I played all those games in my head. Oh, I went to like organic wine. I did that for a while. I'm like, well, that I feel even better in the morning. I'm not hungover as bad. This is, I played the whole it's good for my heart game. But then that just led into worse things. Like, I mean, not that wine is a great thing, but I still remember where we were. We were in Deep Creek, Maryland, away on a little mini getaway here outside of Pittsburgh. And I think we split like a bottle of wine one night. And then the next night, I think I had a whole bottle myself. And then on these trips, I would get really, really loaded up pretty good. And then it came to the point where I had buddies coming in from out of town. And they're like, you know, are you back like drinking again? And I'm like, yeah, like come on into town. And then I would be back to shots and really, really getting like on my 30th birthday, I was really drunk. And it was mainly like vodka and more hard liquor. So yeah, there was no controlling that once that went down the wrong path again.
Can you remember any of the other lies that you would tell yourself to justify the drinking? Because I think saying those out loud could be helpful if someone else is saying those same things to themselves right now. So if there's anything else you could think of that, you know, would you tell yourself about it being okay?
This is a great question. I'm writing that down. What lies did I'll tell you one that I told myself.
I feel like I'm doing good with good questions today.
Oh, you're doing very good. I've never been asked that. Yeah, that's a great question. What lies did I tell myself? I mean, the first one was the second time around, I can control it now. Like, that's a lie that I told myself. I'm in much more control, which was not true. The second lie I told myself, and this is more like a blaming lie, I told myself, most other people drink. So what's wrong with me drinking? Like, I'm just fitting in with everybody else. And maybe that was part of it too. I felt like a black sheep or an outlier when I stopped the first time. And maybe I struggle with that a little bit more than I thought I did. But that's a lie I told myself. I told myself this the whole time drinking. It's not that bad. It's really not that bad. And that's just, like we said earlier, just justifying an issue that I was having. I mean, it was bad. Like, I had no control once I started drinking in a given night. So having a couple drinks, I mean, I remember thinking to myself, here's another lie. That would be another one. I can just have 2 drinks tonight. Like, that was such a lie, because after 2, if I feel good after 2, I'm going to feel amazing after 4, and then I'm going to feel unstoppable after 8. And then I wake up on the floor again. So that's always how it worked. I could never, ever stop at 1 or 2. I mean, I think another lie I told myself was the people I surrounded myself with. I told myself I'm okay being around intense drinkers, and I'm not now. Like, I don't have any close friends who drink. It, maybe you have one here or there, but like, nothing in excess, and they don't really drink around me at all. And I'm not saying that to say I've been in bar situations for, you know, a bachelor party or wedding or something. Plenty of people are drinking. I have no desire to consume drinks when I'm there. I was just at a wedding last weekend. I had a blast, completely sober, danced the entire night. It was awesome. But I think I wasn't ready to put myself in those scenarios right out of the gate, where I was still seeing friends that I basically based the whole relationship on alcohol. And it was hard to be back in those scenarios. So yeah, those are 3 lies. I'm sure there were a lot more. I mean, it's good for my heart. That was one. It's organic, so it's better for me. That was definitely another one. There were a lot of lies. What do you remember, any lies you told yourself? This is a great question.
Jesus drank wine.
Oh, that's a good one. I never used that one, but that's a good one.
Yeah, well, I have a grandma that I had to tell that one to justify my drinking to her. You know, she would bug me. Well, maybe I did have somebody that saw it as a problem. But yeah, so my grandma didn't like drinking at all. But I guess maybe I didn't think that she saw it as a problem. I think she thinks any alcohol for anyone is bad, right? So I think, you know, it was like, oh, you know, Jesus drank wine is what I would tell her. So I would tell myself that one as well. I mean, I definitely told myself it's not that bad, you know, or I would look at other people and see, oh, they're worse.
That's one I would do for sure. Compare myself to other people who look like they had it a lot worse than me. Yeah. I definitely did that. I did blame it on, I'm Italian. So I was like, Italian wine, like a lot of, that's part of my heritage. Like that makes sense to be doing that. So it's amazing the stories that, I don't want to say everybody, that I made up to try to justify continuing a habit that I knew was not good for me.
Yeah. And if you find yourself telling yourself a story, then maybe there's a problem.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. Yes.
What was that next bottom like in 2016? What led up to finally deciding to get sober?
I'll share the exact story, which it was actually shortly after my honeymoon at the time. We went to Italy for 2 weeks, and I would love to go back and be there sober, because it's justifying again. I'm on my honeymoon. I'm going to have fun. Wine is everywhere. It's organic, so there's no hangover. And it was every day. I mean, I would drink from after breakfast until after dinner. And there was a lot of walking, so that justified it. Well, I'm walking off the calories. And then we got back from the honeymoon, and as a present, just for the support my family and the love my family gave me for before our wedding, I bought tickets to a Luke Bryan concert, and I set up a limousine to pick up my mom, dad, my brother, my ex-wife, and myself. So five of us were getting in this limousine and going to the Luke Bryan concert. And it was like a huge deal. And everybody was so excited. We love Luke Bryan. It was going to be like an amazing night. And I remember thinking before the concert, like, I need to be careful. Like, I either need to not drink or just go really easy. And then the limo came, and I think I ran inside my parents' house and like ran by a bottle of liquor. And I was like, well, let's just, you know, nobody's in here now. Let me just have a couple. And I probably really quickly chugged like four shots of liquor and then like chew gum and mouthwash to make sure that nobody could smell it. Got back in the limo, and I just got hammered at this concert. And it was embarrassing because it was supposed to be a really nice celebration, a great night. I don't even remember. I barely remember him coming on stage, and I don't remember anything on the drive home. I was supposed to drive home from that, and I mean, I couldn't function at that point. So I passed out at my parents' living on their living room floor, and I just woke up, and I'm like, I this is not for me anymore. Like, I'm trending towards that person I told myself I would never be 5 years ago. And I mean, I'm blessed that it happened, even though looking back, it's a tainted memory, but it was the one that I needed to just finally say, like, I embarrassed myself. I embarrassed my wife at the time, my parents, my brother, my whole family. I don't want this anymore. Like, I want to remember all of these great memories versus just being acting like an idiot and having no recollection of what would have been an amazing night. What was next is I shared with my ex-wife that I think it was the next day or the day after this, I just can't do this anymore because I have no control. I can't control it. And I've proven that over the last couple months. So she didn't, like, I think she was on board. It wasn't like she was made me feel bad about that decision or anything. And what happened was just committing to that, like fully committing to it and saying to myself, like, I am not going to be my best self unless alcohol is out of my life. That's just the truth. And I think having that relapse or whatever you want to call it taught me that I can't control it. I have to own that. I have to get around people that are sober and spend more time with them and just be honest about me and myself and not being able to handle this type of any sort of alcohol consumption. So I think it was like a truth moment of, I know I have this obsessive personality. Let's use it in good ways and avoid the negative ways that it can be used. So that's how it started. And then I slowly started sharing with people. It was like I you know, got on the phone and told everybody I'm done drinking. But as I would see people, I would just say, you know, I have to step away from this. I can't do this anymore. And I was a little more honest than the first time around, where I just sort of faded out of my friend group and didn't say anything. This final time in 2016, I was much more open about, I've had some struggles and I need to stop. And I would share the Luke Bryan concert story, and I just didn't want to be that person anymore. So once the decision is made, I mean, the power that I felt, not like over anybody else, just over myself, was massive. And I just thought, holy crap, can I actually do this? And I'm like, well, yes, I'm committing to this because I want to be the best version of me. And it's not going to happen with alcohol in my life.
So now, over the course of the last, how many years has it been now? Seven?
Yeah, it'll be eight this year, I think, right?
Over the last seven years, if you could talk about maybe the internal growth.
Yeah, it's almost feels like my life started in 2016. Like, that's almost what it feels like, because I don't know how much yourself and your listeners have dealt with this, but it was almost like I have to reteach myself how to communicate sober and how to go to a wedding sober and how to dance sober and how to do all these different things that normally, how to be at, attend a family party at Christmas Eve. How do I do that sober? And it was almost like reinventing myself is really what it felt like. And I use this now when I talk, and I think it's fascinating to think about this. I don't know that I knew this in 2016, but as the years went on, I almost developed this alter ego. And it's, I don't know how much you looked at my website, but I call it, like, this is just my word. I call it the savage version of myself. And I don't mean that in like a aggressive, like violent way. I just mean it as I'm committing to myself and I'm going to commit to growth. And I sometimes need to tap into this version when there's alcohol around me, or I feel like there's something's going to pull me in a negative direction or pull me back into a negative habit. I tap into this savage version of myself that can handle anything. And it doesn't matter what life is throwing at me, I'm going to be able to handle it. So I use it a lot when you're mentioning the Navy SEAL stuff and just any of these ultra endurance events. There's a certain, there's actually a point, my girlfriend actually just saw it a couple weeks ago for the first time. We were doing this ultra marathon and it was like 14 hours into the race. And like, it was the worst part of the race. It had just started raining. We're trying to go 55 miles and it got really cold. It was like midnight, 12:30 at night. And we had to go through this stream that was like waist deep. So you're cold, the water's cold, it's raining. And she saw this, like, it's like a flip, like a switch that I can flip. And I turn into this, obviously it's me, but it's like a different version of myself that I would start yelling and like singing and just laughing, like bringing on Mother Nature. Doesn't matter what's happening. I'm going to be here. Like, we're going to keep going no matter what. And I think we all have that version that can handle anything that life throws at us. It's just a matter of tapping into it and almost training ourselves to be able to do difficult things. And I often say this when I give talks before a marathon: challenges build champions, in my opinion. Challenges build champions, because going through these difficult times, that I'm not standing here saying I'm some massive champion, but the difficult times, as you alluded to in the beginning of the call, made me who I am today. And if it weren't for being obese or being an alcoholic or going through divorce or diagnosed with ADHD, like, I wouldn't have had the resiliency to get over that. And to the point where I don't think I'm unstoppable. I know there's a lot of things that could, you know, do harm to me, but I have a lot more confidence that when that adversity hits, I have the tools to get through it. And that's really like the alter ego that I call the savage version of myself that I tap into when the times get difficult, and sort of replay, well, wait a minute, it's hard right now, but you overcame all these things. You're still here. You can get through whatever the next setback is. And I believe that for anybody on this call. If you're breathing, there's a reason you're still here. There's a reason you're still here. And no matter how tough it is right now, you've been through everything you've been through and you're still breathing. So I think there's still a massive chance for success. And I think we can get through anything if we tap into this tougher, more resilient version of ourselves.
Do you think that that savage is an alter ego, or do you think that is the kokoro, the essence of you?
That's a really good, you just gave me goosebumps asking that question. Look, like my hair, my arms are going up. That's a great question.
And where did it come from?
That's a really good one. You really have me thinking. It's definitely, it probably is my essence. I mean, it's something that I think has been in me for a very long time. And it's just taken certain growth and or events to help bring it out. And you're right. Like, when that switch flips, it feels like I am in full alignment and I am euphoric. I mean, it really is a euphoric feeling where it just feels like I can run forever, or I can give a great speech forever, or I can when I'm emceeing these marathons, I could encourage people forever. Like, I'm in my full alignment and in my purpose. And I think that's probably what that word really feels like for me. So that's, you're going to have me journaling about that question for a long period of time. And I got a name. So there was it's probably 4 years ago. No, it was like 3.5 years ago when I did my first Ironman. It was like 2 weeks after my ex-wife had asked me for a divorce. And the Ironman was like a month after I had Achilles surgery. So I was thinking I wasn't going to be able to do this Ironman. This might be a bad idea. I don't know. So a 2.4 mile swim followed by a bike ride of 130 some miles. And then you run a full marathon at the end all in the same day. And I somehow got through it. And I remember at the finish line, like my ex-wife would normally have been there and she wasn't there because we had split and I was by myself. And one of the guys that I had sort of done a lot of the event with was asking me about my story as we finished the marathon. And he said something like you had Achilles surgery a month ago and your ex-wife asked you for a divorce 2 weeks ago. Like, that's savage that you just got through an Ironman. And I kind of gave me goosebumps when he said it. And I was like, well, maybe that's either the Kokoro in me or the alter ego in me that can push through even in the toughest times. And again, I think we all of us have that version of ourselves in us.
I know I said that was the last question, but I was wondering if, I guess I have one more, and it's, is there anything that you maybe came in here to this call wanting to share? Like, okay, this is something that you love sharing that maybe was missed through the interview that you just want to add before we end.
Yeah, that's a great question too. I'll share two quick things that just mini habits that I do. And I'm actually wearing a shirt. That's one of them. It says 5 a.m. dance party on it. And this is something that I started during COVID just because I'm probably out of boredom. But every time my alarm goes off in the morning, I think we have two choices, which is we can take action on the day or we can react to the day. And reacting to the day would be you check your email right at the beginning, you check social media, you turn the news on. Now you're already out of your own head and your heart and you're reacting to what you're seeing out in the external world. And as soon as my alarm goes off, there's two things I do without fail every morning. It may be 5 seconds, it may be the whole song, but I will dance like a crazy person right when the alarm goes off. And it just changes my whole state. Like, I am excited for the day. I often say that I've never seen anybody dancing and upset. Like, it's almost impossible. Like, if you're dancing, you're probably laughing or smiling or having a good time in some way, even if you're not good. Like, I'm not a good dancer at all, but I feel great doing it. And then the second thing, and maybe this is a takeaway that your listeners can use, and this has helped shape my whole life. Somebody asked me what I want my destiny to be or how I want to be remembered. And I do this thing that I call the smile file, which is just anybody that sends me a positive comment on social media or in person. If they say, thank you for this speech, it really helped me with XYZ. I print it out or I screenshot it on my phone and I save all of them. And I read one right after I do the 5 a.m. dance party. I read one of these and it may be from 2 weeks ago. It may be from 6 years ago, but it's like, if I can positively impact other people, then that's a huge purpose for me. And no matter how bad, whatever's going on in my life, look at that impact I had on somebody else. And this is not me. I'm sure all of your listeners are having positive impacts on other people. And, you know, maybe you don't have 100 of them, but maybe you have 4, and then you read one every morning and then keep reading the 4 every 4 days. So it's been a really big habit that has helped me remain positive, especially in the face of some difficult times.
I love that because it makes you also pay attention to when people are giving encouragement. So you're saying, you know, everybody that's listening, somebody has said something nice, most likely, at some point, but you have to pay attention to it. You have to pay attention to it. You have to file it away and look at it. And then maybe when you look at it, it gives you motivation to be even a better person for that day. And eventually you'll get more. You'll get more encouragement as time goes on, right? You just keep putting those in your file. So I love that. Thank you.
Thank you for saying that too. Well said. And that's exactly what it does. It helps with the awareness. And then it does. Like there are, I mean, quite honestly, sometimes I'm like, well, I haven't had anything in my smile file for a few weeks. Like I better start doing more good things. Like it like makes you want to continue to add value to other people. And it is. It's just, it's addicting. And it's definitely like that's to me. If I died today, my smile file would be what I would pass on. Like that's what I would want people to see who I positively impacted in my life.
Well, thank you so much. This was fun. I appreciate you being on the show, reaching out. And if anybody wanted to reach out to you, how would they get in touch?
Yeah, I'm very active on Instagram. So it's just my name at Matt Scaletti, or my website is the same. It's just mattscaletti.com. But I'm very active on Instagram. So anybody that reaches out or DMs me, I'm happy to get into a conversation. And I get a lot of people when I post about sobriety, that's what they DM me. Like, I feel too embarrassed to tell my friends, my family, they're in this battle alone, and it crushes me. And I'm not an expert, but I'm happy to just share a piece of what I learned through it all with anybody that needs that kind of help.
Great. Thank you for that. So I'm glad that you have that as an opening for people to reach out. So you heard it here, reach out to him. He's available if you need somebody to talk to. So thank you so much for being here. And this was fun.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Before you go, please subscribe and leave a 5-star written review. Reviews help boost my ratings, which helps other people in recovery find my show. If you're interested in donating to keep this content free, check out the show notes to buy me a mocktail. Don't forget to like, follow, and share with a friend. I'm super excited to know this podcast is helping you. Tune in Thursdays for the latest episode. Until next time.
'Cause we are stronger than we think we are. So fight and show your strength. Good and grace from our God. Good and grace from our God. Good and grace from our God. Oh, good and grace from our God.